Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 329 for August 14th, 2011. Coming up in a few minutes.
There is no typical second Saturday tasting. We might have one person in the dead of winter when there's a horrendous snowstorm going and the fireplace is roaring and we think nobody's coming and somebody will show up.
It's the second weekend of the month, and that's a big weekend in Atlantic City, Wyoming, where Bob Townsend and his wife Barbara own the Miner's Delight Inn. Bob presides over the second Saturday single malt tastings at the inn and gets guests from as far away as California. I'll have more with Bob later on, along with the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First, though, let's look at the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Japan's Kuruozawa Distillery was mothballed 10 years ago. Since then, its whiskeys have won awards in many competitions around the world. But Kirin, which acquired the distillery in a merger several years ago, appears to have no plans for reopening it. That's because Kirin has sold off the entire remaining stock of Kuruozawa casks to Number One Drinks Company, which is owned by David Kroll and Martin Miller. The casks are being moved to a warehouse at Ichiro Akuto's Chichibu Distillery for safekeeping. David and Martin are planning to release an 11-year-old Kuruozawa bottling soon to join their vintage casks series from Kuruozawa. By the way, they'll also be launching the first 3-year-old bottling of single malt from Chichibu later this month at Whiskey Live Taipei. More new whiskeys to mention this week. Amrut is releasing a second edition of Two Continents. Like the first, it started off maturation at Amrut's warehouses in Bangalore, and the casks were later moved to a cooler but still undisclosed location in Europe for final maturation. It's being bottled at 50% ABV and will be available in Europe, Canada, the U.S., and Taiwan. Amrut is also sending a new edition of Kadambam to the U.S., and while it sounds a bit like a drummer's rim shot, it's actually a fairly complex bottling of whiskey. Kadambam means mixture in Tamil, which is one of the languages spoken in southern India, and this is a mixture of peated and unpeated Amrut whiskies vatted together first in ex-Oloroso sherry casks, then transferred to brandy casks for final maturation. The original release of Kadambam was limited to Europe last year. This release is being bottled at 50% ABV. I received samples of both new Amruts this week, and I'll have tasting notes for them later in this episode. Each year, John Hall of Canada's Kittling Ridge Distillery comes out with a special edition of his 40 Creek Canadian whiskey. This year, he's already started taking orders for 40 Creek John's Private Cask No. 1. In past years, he's experimented with different types of barrels, such as last year's Confederation Oak. This time, he's tweaked the proportions of the rye, corn, and barley whiskeys he marries together to create the final blend. Now, you may remember from past interviews that John doesn't create a mash bill of grains to distill. He distills and ages each grain whiskey separately, then marries them together at the end of the process. Only 9,000 bottles will be available for release this fall, and this time it'll only be available in Canada. I haven't tasted it yet, but my good friend Devin DeCargamo of the Malt Maniacs and CanadianWhiskey.com has, and he thinks it's the best 40 Creek yet. More White Dog releases to mention this week. Buffalo Trace has been selling its Mash No. 1 White Dog for a couple of years. It's from the recipe used to make Buffalo Trace bourbon. Now the White Dogs using wheat and rye recipes are going to be available. The Wheated Mash White Dog is the recipe that's used for Pappy Van Winkle and W.L. Weller bourbons. The Rye Mash White Dog eventually becomes Sazerac Straight Rye Whiskey. Both White Dogs are being sold at barrel proof, 57% ABV for the Wheated Mash and 62.5% for the Rye. If you've ever wanted to go back to school, but to learn about whiskey this time around, Springbank has set the dates for its 2012 series of whiskey schools at the distillery in Campbellton. Headmaster Frank McCarty will hold 10 weekly sessions starting the week of April 16, 2012, and ending the week of June 18th. If you're interested, send an email to this address, whiskeyschool, one word, at springbankwhiskey.com. I'll also post that address on the WhiskeyCast website, too. Edinburgh is finally recovering, not from the rioting plaguing many UK cities, but from last weekend's whiskey fringe on the Royal Mile. Each year, the public votes on their favorite whiskeys at the festival. This year, Old Pulteney's 17-year-old was the winner, followed by a 24-year-old Glengoyne 1987 single cask, a 21-year-old Rosebank bottled by Douglas Lang, the Brookladdie 21-year-old Black Art II, and the Tomatin Decades bottling. Now, that expression honors retired Tomatin distillery manager Douglas Campbell on his 50 years in the whiskey business. He'll be leading a tasting August 22nd at the Whiskey Exchange Vinopolis store in London. Tickets go on sale this Monday. The attendees will help select a Tomatin single cask bottling to be sold exclusively at the Whiskey Exchange. Many distilleries sponsor cultural events, and I don't always mention them here on WhiskeyCast. But a couple of days after I posted a black-and-white photo I shot at Balblair Distillery in June, I got a news release about the distillery's sponsorship of the Art of Photography show at San Diego's Lyceum Theater Gallery. The exhibition includes 109 finalists selected from more than 15,000 entries by photographers from 72 countries. It's open through October 23rd. It's not quite a cultural festival, but the Camelback Inn in Scottsdale, Arizona, is holding a month-long celebration of bourbon during September, which is National Bourbon Heritage Month in the U.S. The festival actually starts August 30th with a bartending competition to be judged by longtime master distiller Lincoln Henderson of Angel's Envy Bourbon, and it includes Saturday afternoon bourbon tastings and bourbon-inspired spa treatments. Purists, cover your ears for a second. One of those treatments uses bourbon combined with brown sugar to create what the inn calls an intoxicating ginger spice and pecan-flavored body scrub, appealing to both men and women. Personally, I prefer my bourbon treatments applied orally. There's a link for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. That's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. There's still time to visit the Glenmorangie USA Facebook page and enter to win a trip to the distillery, meet some of the 16 men of Tain, and stay at the Glenmorangie house. The deadline is September 30th. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well made. Let's check the comments of the week brought to you this time around by the folks at Highland Park. First, thanks to Sean Fauché in Arlington, Texas. Sean was one of the first buyers of the exhibition photo prints on the WhiskeyCast website, and he posted some great comments on Twitter after his print was delivered this week. Thank you, Sean. I'm now posting news headlines on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page during the week instead of waiting until the weekend to pass them along here on the show. Earlier this week, I mentioned the Whiskey Fringe Awards, and Christopher Winters praised the selection of Old Pulteney's 17-year-old. His words: "That is a very underrated whiskey. I first tasted it at St. Andrews in New York City. It's on my shelf at home. Love it. In fact, I think I'll pour it right now. I'm home at my pub, relaxing, enjoying happy hour at Winter's Pub." Of course, we heard from Christopher last time around on that Talisker photo that he framed and hung at his home pub. I had forgotten that a few weeks ago, I said I would post the photos he sent me of his pub on the Facebook page. Finally posted the pictures this week, and Christopher received several very nice compliments from community members. Thanks also to Jane Matthews, who shared a story from the Holler.com blog by Amanda Sturgis this week on her grandmother, who lived to the vintage age of 97, drinking Coke every day, or so Amanda thought. Turns out that when Amanda received her grandmother's apron, she found something else that may have contributed to Grandma's serenity and maybe even her long life. There were three hidden pockets inside the apron with miniature bottles of Canadian Club inside. Now that's a cool grandma. If you have a story you'd like to share along with questions or suggestions, you can post them on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park.
Hello, this is Jerry Tosh of Highland Park, the makers of the best spirit in the world. If you'd like to go onto the WhiskeyCast website and click on the banner, then it'll take you to the inner circle and sign up, and we'll send you as much information about Highland Park as you'd ever need to know.
Time now for the calendar of events, brought to you as always by Laphroaig. Bonhams will hold its next auction of rare whiskies on August 17th in Edinburgh, and McTeers will hold one on the 24th in Glasgow. The Kensington Wine Market in Calgary, Alberta, will host Michael Urquhart of Gordon & MacPhail for tastings of the Glenlivet Generations range on August 25th and 26th. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Australian chapter will hold a tasting in Brisbane on the 26th. By the way, the Society's U.S. chapter will begin its fall series of single malt extravaganzas soon. You can get tickets at the members' price by using the discount code WC2011 when you visit their website. Meanwhile, the Mac McGee Irish Pub in Decatur, Georgia, just outside Atlanta, will hold a Four Roses Bourbon Dinner August 30th. Whiskey Live Glasgow is coming up September 3rd. Whiskey Live Paris, September 24th through the 26th. The Whiskey Guild's annual New York City Whiskey Cruise is September 8th. And the Kentucky Bourbon Festival is September 13th through the 18th in Bardstown. There's a full calendar of whiskey events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Visit the all-new Laphroaig website today at Laphroaig.com, where you can become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla. I live about 50 miles away from Atlantic City. It's full of traffic, lousy casinos, crowded beaches, and way too many extras from Jersey Shore. That's not the Atlantic City we're talking about this week. This Atlantic City is about a couple of thousand miles away from the Atlantic Ocean in the middle of Wyoming. The air is clean, the skies are blue, and on the second Saturday night of the month, they sit around and drink whiskey at the Miner's Delight Inn. Not the rot-gut whiskey we saw cowboys drink in all of those old westerns, but single malt scotch. Bob Townsend and his wife Barbara own the Miner's Delight Inn.
I have always been a scotch drinker, generally a blend, but then when single malt started becoming more readily available in the 80s, I switched to single malts. When we got here, there was no fine liquor to speak of on the back bar. So we added six single malts that were on the Wyoming state list. Because Wyoming's a control state, we have to buy from the state. And we had a Scotsman stay with us once. His name was David. And he stayed for 8 days. And on his last day, he left the list and said, if you ever decide to expand your single malt collection, try these. So we added everything on his list. And then we came up with the idea of maybe there would be enough interest to start tastings. So we had one tasting, it was a ticketed event, catered food. It went over so well, we decided 2 months later to start the monthlies. And we just celebrated our third anniversary of monthly tastings last month. And we get great response. It's been phenomenal. We had no idea there were so many people interested in single malt scotch whiskey.
Now, how did you and your wife Barbara wind up buying the Miner's Delight Inn to begin with?
I grew up 50 miles north of here, and when I was a little boy, my grandmother used to bring me to the Carpenter Hotel, which is now our place, for Saturday or Sunday brunch. And one time when Barbara and I were visiting some of my old high school buddies in Riverton, where I grew up, we were on our way home to Laramie, and I said, you just need to see Atlantic City. It's a neat little town. So we drove by. And there was the proverbial for sale by owner sign on what was by then named the Miner's Delight Inn. And we just fell in love with the place. The town's dirt streets and the old 1880s and 90s log buildings. And our place was built in 1904. Just absolutely captivated us. So here we are.
What were you doing before?
Between the two of us, Barbara and I have 52 years in the U.S. Air Force. And when we retired from that in 2000, we went to Laramie to go to the University of Wyoming. We were on the 5.5-year plan to get our bachelor's degree. And it was one of those spring breaks while we were students that we visited Riverton and found this place.
That's a great story. What were you guys doing in the Air Force, by the way?
Barbara was electronics maintenance, and as she describes it, if you've ever watched the movies and they say, put it through the scrambler, that was the equipment that she worked on. And then for her last 8 years in the service, she was a first sergeant, which has no real direct civilian correlation, but anybody that's been in the Air Force or the Army or the Marines will probably understand what a first sergeant is. And I was an air traffic controller.
So if there are any electrical issues at the inn, she's the one who fixes them, right?
Absolutely. She has taught me everything I know about electricity. And I'm still afraid of it.
I know that feeling, having had to deal with it at this place a few times over the years. Tell me about the history of the inn. You said you went there with your grandmother when you were a kid, so this place really goes back a long ways, doesn't it?
It does. The Carpenter family arrived in Atlantic City in 1890 in a covered wagon. That was still happening in 1890 on the Oregon Trail. And they got here so late in the year that they realized they couldn't make it over our mountains and the Sierra Nevadas to get to Oregon, which was their destination. So they decided to stay here for the winter. And Mr. Carpenter got a job working for one of the gold mines here. But they didn't pay in cash. They paid in flour. So his wife, Nellie, being very industrious and creative, turned that flour into food and began serving meals in their home. And in 1904, there was somewhat of a rebound of gold mining. So the Carpenters decided to build the Carpenter Hotel. And they had 6 hotel rooms, served 3 meals a day through that gold rush until the bust happened. And their eldest daughter, Ellen, stayed here running the Carpenter Hotel, serving 3 meals a day and renting rooms until she passed away in 1961. And a New York City couple of great fame for New York City. The gal was a magazine editor and the guy was a marketing director. In fact, he's the one that coined the phrase the wide track Pontiac for General Motors back in the early 60s.
Okay.
They had stayed here with Miss Ellen in 1950s. And when they found out she had passed away, they decided to give up New York City, and they bought the place, spent 2 years doing a little renovation and learning how to cook at, Gina went to the Le Cordon Bleu in Paris to learn how to make sauces, and they went to other culinary schools here in the States, and had Miner's Delight Inn, the restaurant, and served gourmet meals here for about 35 years.
And then you took it over from them.
No, there was another couple between Paul and Gina and us that had it for 9 years, and then we bought the place in 2006.
You having fun?
Absolutely. This is a blast.
What's the?
This is more fun than having a whole pattern full of airplanes.
Oh, I can imagine. Now, tell me about the typical second Saturday tasting.
Oh, gosh, Mark. Well, what we have learned in our 3 years now is there is no typical second Saturday tasting. We might have one person in the dead of winter when there's a horrendous snowstorm going and the fireplace is roaring and we think nobody's coming and somebody will show up. In June of this year, we kind of expected a light crowd because the summer months tend to be a little modest. And we had 22 folks. So the place was relatively overflowing with people.
Wow.
We have 4 stools at our bar.
In terms of the scotches you'll serve, how many scotches, things like that?
Well, we feature 3, so we always pick 3 that we will start with at each tasting from the 77 available on the back bar. And the 4th expression of the night, folks roll a die, and magically, although there are officially only 5 regions where scotch is made, we like to use the islands as the 6th region, and a die has 6 numbers, so people roll a die, and then they get to select their expression from the region they roll. And the 5th expression is connoisseur's choice. They can have any of the 77 on the back bar.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun. People have a good time.
And part of the attraction of this is that you guys really are literally out in the prairie. Where is Atlantic City?
Well, the closest town of any size to us is Lander, Wyoming. That's 30 miles away. Population, about 7,500 people. And that's where we get our gas. That's where we get groceries. That's where we mail packages or letters. We do have a contact mail carrier that delivers mail to us. And the next biggest town is Riverton. That's 50 miles away. That's where I grew up. And then Casper, a town that probably a lot of people might recognize, is about 140 miles east of us. And the path between Casper and us pretty much follows the Oregon Trail all the way across there. Our elevation is 7,700 feet. So we get a lot of snow in the winter, a lot of wind.
And you're open year-round, right?
We are, yes. And the winter months, the winter tastings are absolutely the best because of the snow outside and the fireplace roaring. Just seems to fit.
Even if there's only one person that shows up, right?
Absolutely. We still have a good time.
How hard is it being in a control state to get unusual whiskeys and unusual scotches that I can imagine it must be fairly difficult, but how well have you been able to work with the state to get some of the expressions you do get?
The state bends over backwards to help us do what we do. Our limiting factor is not that we're in a control state, but it is the importers who strongly allocate the whiskeys they bring into the USA. We often hear back from the state when we put in a price request or an order for a very limited production whiskey that there's no allocation for Wyoming. So it's not the control state problem, it's the importer that decides we get it or don't get it.
What can we do to help with that? Because I know we have a number of importers and distributors that listen to WhiskeyCast, and if they realize there's a market for at least a few bottles in Wyoming, maybe they might make some available to you.
Well, you know, and Mark, over the 3 years we've been doing this, we have seen a dramatic change and much, much better support from the folks. Just for an example, this year's Laphroaig special whiskey for the Isla Fest, the Whiskey Fest, Laphroaig Karchus, which has always been just sold from the distillery, as I understand it.
There was a limited Friends of Laphroaig bottling that was mostly sold in Europe. This year, they finally made it available in the U.S. for the first time.
Right. And when I put in a price request for that through the state, a few days later, I got a note back saying it's not going to be imported to Wyoming. So Simon Brooking is the Laphroaig guy for the USA. And I sent Simon an email saying, hey, you know, I really like to have an opportunity to offer this. And 2 days later, I got a price back. And now, on the back bar, we have Laphroaig Karchus.
Any other success stories that people have helped you out with that deserve some credit?
Yeah, the folks at Shaw Ross have been just simply phenomenal. We have, within the last month, received our case of Jura 21-year-old, the 200th anniversary edition, and only... as I understand it, 300 bottles of that came to the USA, so we got a case of that. McKinley's rare old Highland malt.
The Shackleton.
Absolutely. We have a case of that sitting in the warehouse now. I'm just waiting for a few, in the Wyoming State warehouse, I'm just waiting for a few other cases to arrive to have that shipped up to us. So the folks at Char Ross have been fabulous as well. And there are others. We have several Edward Hours on the back bar that were very limited release in the U.S. We have three different of those. So the folks at Total Beverage Solutions back on the East Coast have been great to work with.
Now, who do we need to lean on for you?
Oh, I don't know that we want to lean on anybody. Through many, many months of communications and emails and phone calls back and forth, we were able to get two cases of Glenfiddich Snow Phoenix when there was supposed to be no allocation for Wyoming, actually. So we really appreciated the support out of the folks in Southern California for that. They made that happen for us. And it has been a stellar, stellar whiskey for us. People just absolutely love it.
That'll be good this winter because there's a great story behind that one, too, with the warehouses collapsing over in Scotland.
There is. That's a wonderful story. And people like whiskeys with a story for some reason.
Well, that's what makes whiskey unique, really, in that there's a story almost behind every single whiskey you can find. There's really a good story out there that you don't get with many other spirits, which are created by the marketing types.
You bet. You bet. And about almost a third of the whiskeys we have on the back bar out of the 77 are limited release, special release, or no longer bottled. We still have Laphroaig 15 on the back bar, which We don't find many people that come to us that have are familiar with Lafleur 15, but the folks that are familiar with it simply love it that we have a case. There's another special note of interest here, too, the A. Hardy Company, who imports the Edin malt, got us a case of the Macri Moore, and that was also a very limited intro into the U.S.
That's really great. I haven't even had a chance to try that one yet.
Wonderful stuff.
Now,
they call it their first peated expression, and the peat's there. And I know it's gotten some strong reviews and some not so strong reviews, but it's been very popular on our back bar.
I have to ask, do you have bourbons and other stuff on the shelf too, or just scotch?
Well, thanks to Wes Henderson, we have Angel's Envy on the back bar. And we have Knob Creek, which was a single barrel bottling for the Wyoming Liquor Division 75th anniversary. And then we have a Jack Daniel's single barrel that was also a single barrel bottling specifically for the Wyoming Liquor Division 75th anniversary. And one of these days in the future, and from talking with the master distiller, Steve Nally, and the owners of the Wyoming Whiskey Distillery in Kirby, Wyoming, I don't know exactly when we'll get to offer Wyoming whiskey, but we will certainly be one of the saloons in the state that offers that when they decide it's ready.
And that's what I was just going to ask you, because I know that they're aging some whiskey right now up in Kirby, and I think it's, what, about an hour and a half, 2 hours up the road from you guys?
A little farther, maybe?
And I know they're working on some really interesting whiskeys up there.
They are. Steve Nally, as most people in the bourbon world know, spent 30 years at Maker's Mark. And the guys that decided to start Wyoming Whiskey hired him to be their master distiller. And Barbara and I just spent probably an hour with Steve last month talking whiskey and when they're going to release theirs, and he's a pretty conservative guy. He'd like to have some older stuff for the first go, but we'll just see. You know, their saying is, it'll be good and ready when it's good and ready.
What's the most unusual whiskey that you have on the back bar besides the 75th anniversary for the state whiskeys and the most unusual stuff you've got back there?
Well, the Jura 21-year-old, I think, is very special. And I haven't heard a lot of press about it, which is kind of surprising for something that that limited. Snow Phoenix, obviously, with all of its press, is unusual. I think perhaps, though, and I got to give Ken Young down at Price Imports a big pat on the back and a thank you for getting us the different Ben Riach expressions that he's gotten us since we've started all of this. And the most interesting one of those is the last year's bottling. It's a 15-year-old, 1995 vintage, peated and finished in Pedro Jimenez casks. It is simply wonderful. And Ken's a great guy to work with. He's made sure we get everything we want. To include each one of the different Kilcarrons that have come in so far.
It seems like you've gotten a lot of really good support for a lot of these guys. This would be an account that would be almost too small to work with in Wyoming, but as you said, they've really been over backwards to help.
Yep, the ones I've mentioned have certainly done that. It's been wonderful support from them.
Now, where do people come from for your tastings? Obviously, there's not a big local crowd in Atlantic City, and then I would imagine it's somewhat difficult to drive from as far away as Riverton or Casper, but where are you drawing your folks from?
We get people from Riverton, from Casper. We've had a couple from Jackson Hole that showed up one night for a tasting and then drove home after the tasting because we serve half-ounce shots. And it's over a three-hour period, as we advertise it. If people want to stay longer than that, we accommodate that. We don't kick people out the door. And so 5 half-ounce shots in a 3-hour period. The one thing we really appreciate about it is that nobody gets absolutely ripped up. And they are actually willing or able to drive home without violating the law. We've had folks from Salt Lake, from all over California, from South Dakota, from Colorado, Idaho, Montana. And I have to say that your Whiskey Cast, when the first time you ever put us on there and said that you had heard from us, that in itself generated someone coming to us from Utah. So we just never know.
I'm glad to have helped with that. Now, we also have to acknowledge here that it's not just an inn in terms of food and beverage, but you guys also have some cabins, too, and regular bed and breakfast type accommodations.
We do. That's what we do, Mark, is bed and breakfast. Yeah, the breakfast is the only meal we serve in the day. There are we have 5 cabins and then 3 rooms upstairs. And there are probably 25 of us that live here year-round in Atlantic City. And we have 2 restaurants. One of them I would consider a world-class steakhouse. And the other, this summer, has got, I ask those folks all the time, why they even have a menu, because they have so many specials every day that just blow away the standard menu items that it's wonderful.
Now, if someone wants to get out there, what's the nearest, realistically, what's the nearest airport? I'm thinking maybe Salt Lake, maybe that somebody could fly into from anywhere to get to you guys.
Salt Lake is closer than Denver. But we get folks that come in from both of those. And then for the folks who don't mind riding the little twin-engine props, Riverton has an airport that connects both with Salt Lake and Denver.
And you don't fill in on air traffic control at Riverton Airport ever, do you?
No, they don't have air traffic control. It's an uncontrolled airport.
I was being facetious, of course.
But, I knew that. And the pilots that fly in and out of Riverton, the last thing in the world they want is an air traffic controller.
What's the most enjoyable part about this whole thing?
The wide variety of people we get to meet that come to our home, either to stay here or to spend an evening drinking and talking about single malt Scotch whiskey. The people are just what make this the whole thing. And we get people from all walks of life, from the oil field workers down south of us in the big oil and gas field to doctors and lawyers. So the whole spectrum.
The next Second Saturday tasting is September 10th. Bob says there are still seats at the bar, but all of the rooms are already booked. Of course, you could just sleep out under the stars like the Cowboys used to. Now, they don't offer internet access at the Miner's Delight, but they do have a website. You'll find a link for it at the Whiskey Cast website. I mentioned the Tomatin Decades single malt earlier. It's a vatting of casks from Douglas Campbell's 5 Decades of Distilling. And let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with a look at it. It's bottled at 46% ABV, and the nose is intense, fruity, and spicy, with baked apples, cinnamon toast, and just a hint of citrus underneath. The taste is spicy and two-toned, cinnamon on the tip of the tongue, hazelnut at the back of the mouth, with hints of apples, too. The finish is long and spicy with a touch of nuttiness. Overall, it's a complex whiskey that's worth spending some time with. I'm scoring the Tomatin Decades a 93. Amritz Kadambam is bottled at 50% ABV. The nose has a subtle smokiness with hints of oak and malt, balanced with brown sugar and caramel sweetness. The taste is unexpectedly spicy, cinnamon balanced by brown sugar and hazelnut notes. The finish is lingering and slightly spicy, too. I'm scoring Amritz Kadambam an 87. Now, a couple of years ago, I tasted the original version of Amrut Two Continents. The notes are available at the WhiskeyCast website for that one. But the second edition is slightly different. It's bottled at 50% ABV instead of the original edition's 46%. That gives it a slightly perkier nose with spicy notes of cumin, nutmeg, licorice, and cinnamon. The taste is thick and spicy with cinnamon, cumin, curry powder, and licorice. But a citrusy lemon note develops later on, and it lasts all the way through the finish, along with a touch of toasted oak. I'm scoring the Amrut Two Continents Second Edition a 93. The original received a 94 2 years ago. You'll find all of my tasting notes at the WhiskeyCast website and in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple version is sponsored by the Glenrothes, while the Android version is brought to you by Benromic. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website, along with links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the photo gallery and print shop, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.